various species flick by as if on the pages of a book. BBC Natural World. Against a dramatic backdrop of snow-capped mountains, a solitary seal swims against dark, rippling waters. A whale strikes.
The killer whale.
Seals on the shore.
For thousands of years, it was feared as a single-minded, ruthless hunter.
The whale attacks them through the wash.
But in just half a century, killer whales have emerged as the most popular and most studied marine mammals in the world.
Four in a row.
Our understanding of what they can do and why they do it has been transformed. When it comes to killer whales, not everything is black and white.
On a rigid inflatable,
a global investigation is producing a series of breakthroughs.
It's on!
Got that one? It's a great sample.
Using a range of techniques, scientists can enter the lives of these surprisingly complex creatures.
It's very selfless behavior.
They're revealing sophisticated teamwork.
Swimming through the shallows.
Incredible ingenuity. Even an advanced form of communication.
I stumbled into the existence of a dialect system that I really had no idea existed.
Now, the very latest research challenges our fundamental assumptions about what these animals are.
There's not just the killer whale anymore.
Finally, the killer whale's true colors can be revealed.
Killer whales, beneath the surface. A killer whale's dorsal fin slices through still waters before submerging. Narrated by Alec Newman. An aerial view of a rugged coastline.
The west coast of America. Grey whales are migrating towards distant feeding grounds. A mother escorts her calf, trying to keep a low profile.
The youngster is swimming close to his mother's side, beneath the surface.
But a pack of killers has spotted them. 7 meters long, 5 tons in weight, and traveling at over 30 miles an hour, a single killer whale is a formidable foe.
5 of them in a row.
Working as a team, they're almost invincible.
They spray seawater from their blowholes. A grey whale turns onto its side, then a killer whale glides over it, forcing water high up into the air. An underwater view.
The grey whale mother is 6 times the killer whale's weight. But like wolves, the ocean's top predators can take on creatures far larger than themselves.
One lands on the calf's back.
They take it in turns to dunk the youngster. They're trying to drown it.
Blood issues from its mouth as it swims, with a killer whale trying to pin it down. The calf rises up through the waves and close by.
Others fend off its mother.
Underwater.
She tries to push her baby to the surface. But against this coordinated pack, the outcome is inevitable.
Blood sprays from the infant. There's a large chunk missing from a fin.
In 1874, a whaling captain who witnessed these whale killers in action described them as spreading death and terror. And so the name killer whale was born.
Beneath a cloudy sky, a panoramic view of a vast, calm ocean scattered with islands.
Bloody tales long haunted the human mind. But in 1964, a chance event that would change this fearsome reputation forever.
Vancouver, Canada.
One of these terrifying sea monsters was brought into captivity for the first time.
From archive film to the present.
For John Ford, today a leading killer whale scientist, this would make a deep impression.
The intention of the Vancouver Aquarium was to collect a specimen from which to make a realistic model of the animal. But the animal wasn't killed by the harpoon that they had used to capture it, and so they tried to keep it alive.
They dragged it 40 miles to a specially constructed pen in Vancouver Harbour, where it attracted huge crowds.
Its tethers are removed.
My father took me down there. I guess I was 9 years old at the time. And it was extremely thrilling seeing this large, scary killer whale in a captive setting.
The public quickly realized how placid this so-called killer actually was.
It dispelled, I think, a lot of the mythology in that it wasn't a ferocious animal. It didn't attack people. It responded well to trainers. It took fish readily from their hands. And so I think that was the very beginning of the change of public attitude towards this species.
They christened it Moby Doll, and they noticed for the first time that this animal talked.
She's making various sounds which you're recording. Could you give us a listen to these?
Yeah, certainly. These were made with a hydrophone in the water.
The reporter listens to the reel-to-reel player.
Do you have any idea just what these noises might be in response to?
Oh, they may be curiosity on the part of the whale. They might be a sign of nervousness, or she may be calling for others of her kind.
I gather it'll be some time then before you can classify these words and make this dictionary, which you hope to do eventually.
Yes, it will.
This pioneering work was the first step on the road to revealing the killer whale's true nature.
Moby Doll is hand-fed a fish, then flops onto its back.
And by the time Moby Doll died of poor health after just 87 days, this single killer whale had inspired a generation to find out more.
Dr. Ford flicks through a book of photographs of dorsal fins.
The discovery of unique markings on the dorsal fin and saddle patch meant individuals could be identified and followed. Gradually, scientists began to unravel their private lives. The largest of the dolphins, killer whales live in family pods, led not by the big-finned males, but by a matriarch. Females reach maturity at around 14 years and have a calf around every three. Both sexes usually remain with their families for life.
Archive film.
Determined to find out more, a young John Ford set out to sea.
He's in a motorboat.
In the early 70s, he got to know 16 pods living around Vancouver Island.
In the present,
I was really interested in underwater acoustics, the communication of these whales. I realized this was an opportunity to actually go out and record identified groups of killer whales.
Often they come under, investigate the hydrophone underwater.
Oh.
It's like A39.
Hoping to understand their language, John started to analyze each family's calls.
That, there it is again. It's a really strong descending tone that is classically age.
But he was in for a surprise.
Very early in this work, by recording different groups, I stumbled into the existence of a dialect system that I really had no idea existed. These dialects aren't subtle. They're quite striking to the ear, even the untrained ear.
With modern technology, John can analyze the calls more closely.
This is an example right here of a northern resident group. Each individual shares the same repertoire of very distinctive calls. Now we'll just switch to the southern residents here. You can see immediately that the voice print, the spectrograms, are quite different between the two samples.
Each killer whale pod has its own dialect, allowing individuals to recognize family members and stick with them for life.
Two pods close together.
Related families have similar dialects. What surprised John was finding a totally different language in the same Canadian waters.
Occasionally, we would run into a different kind of killer whale. These little groups were very silent, but when they did vocalize, they made sounds that were entirely different from the resident groups.
Because they only appeared from time to time, these pods were nicknamed transient.
A pair of whales.
Unlike the residents John knew so well, they had no interest in fish. They were mammal eaters.
A herd of sea lions swim at the surface of the ocean, one corkscrews underwater.
For a single killer whale, a 3-meter, 1-ton stellar sea lion makes a formidable target.
A killer whale launches at the sea lion like a torpedo, creating thousands of tiny bubbles in its wake.
But against a pod of natural-born killers, this lone male stands little chance.
Injured and bleeding, the creature hangs from the surface.
The transients work together. One catches the sea lion's attention. The second attacks. She bludgeons the sea lion into submission.
A plume of sea spray erupts from a surfacing whale.
It may seem savage, but it's hugely effective.
They surround the sea lion.
The transients, it seems, have their own unique lifestyle, comparable to a human culture.
We now realize that even though the species is found globally, in most parts of the world, they seem to be highly specialized cultures that are focused on different prey types.
Whales swim close to the rocks near the coast.
New Zealand's killer whale culture specializes in stingrays.
A ray quickly turns tail.
The spines in their tails have been known to kill. But the local killers have found a way around this thorny problem. By inverting her victim, this female puts it in a trance and its sting out of action.
It has the ray in its teeth upside down.
In Patagonia, the most famous killer whale culture of them all.
A killer whale's dorsal fin glints in the sunlight while unsuspecting sea lions rest in the wash on the sandy shore. Suddenly, a shadow looms above the pair, and in slow motion, a whale ploughs out of the waves, grabbing a sea lion in its jaws as it glides.
It takes years to perfect this extraordinary beaching technique.
It tosses its prey upwards.
But behaviours like these mean this top predator can exploit every corner of the ocean.
An animated map of the world.
After man, killer whales are the most widespread mammal on Earth. But this global population is divided into at least 10 cultures. Scientists began to wonder how different these cultures were. Could there be multiple subspecies, or even separate species of killer whale?
La Jolla, California is pinpointed on the west coast of the USA. Seabirds are resting on coastal rocks, and sea lions are basking nearby.
Southern California, just north of San Diego. The hub of a global investigation into killer whale genetics.
Wearing a lab coat.
Philip Morin is analyzing DNA samples from around the world with the very latest equipment to build a killer whale family tree.
In a lab.
The new technologies have really changed the way we do genetics. We can sequence 16 times more DNA than we were doing before in a single experiment from hundreds of individuals.
Dr. Philip Morin, NOAA Fisheries. Now he's using a computer.
The key is to work out when different populations stopped interbreeding.
The genetics are showing us that the time of divergence of these is much deeper than we had thought originally. It's in the order of hundreds of thousands of years, not tens of thousands of years.
By a forested coastline.
First to go 700,000 years ago were North America's mammal eaters.
A family tree.
Next, the Antarctic population. That then split into several groups.
The cultures labeled.
Other cultures have continued to diversify ever since. Defining new species is a contentious issue, but Philip now thinks there could be four different species of killer whale, and maybe more.
There's not just the killer whale anymore. There are different species out there, and they're as different as two species of dolphin or two species of other whales.
Look closely, and the physical differences are there.
An animation.
Size. Color. Fin shape. Saddle pattern. Eye spot.
In slow motion, a whale rises from the water.
This extraordinary discovery shatters our age-old perception of one global killer whale. Remarkably, there's a place where three of these proposed species live alongside each other. Antarctica, the killer whale capital of the world.
Members of a pod swim side by side.
To find out how these different types coexist, John Durbin and Bob Pittman are heading deep into the ice floes with a very smart piece of kit.
This is one of the satellite tags that we hope to deploy on the killer whales. And it should give us location hits maybe up to 30 or 40 times a day. We hope at least every hour.
It resembles a large ice cube with a wiry antenna at the top.
It's cutting-edge technology. But it takes a centuries-old method to attach it.
Okay, she's coming back around.
John fires a harpoon.
Right here. The 40-gram tag is barely registered by the massive predator.
Their rigid inflatable catches up with a larger vessel.
Now John and Bob can follow its every move.
They stand on the ship's cabin as the whales move on.
The tagged killer heads deep into the ice. She's one of the pack ice killer whales, recognizable by ragged fins and a yellowish hue. They specialize in hunting seals.
Two seals are resting on the flat top of an ice floe. A whale bobs up through a hole in the ice.
First, they spy hop to pinpoint their targets. Then, in perfect synchrony, they create a powerful wave.
The three whales advance beneath the floe, and the resulting wave breaks it up easily.
The seals withstand the first assault.
One slides onto a larger piece to be with the other. A whale spy hops to locate its prey. The three whales gather together.
A second orchestrated attack.
The seals are enveloped by the wave, forcing one into the sea.
One makes a break for it. It won't get far.
It lies alone on what's left of the ice, watching a whale pass in front of it. Suddenly, another wave crashes down over it, pushing it into the water. It stays by the ice, looking around underwater while the whales continue to work together.
The titanic struggle is entering its final phase. Only the iceberg can save the seal now.
They crisscross each other's paths and spray up water at the surface. Surrounded, the seal flounders.
Against lesser predators, the feisty seal would stand a chance.
It watches its predators pass by.
But not against this team of specialist seal killers.
The seal struggles to climb back onto the ice floe. The whale looms behind the little creature and brushes its upper jaw against it. Then, as it sinks away, it takes the seal with it, clamped between its teeth. The tiny piece of empty ice bobs on the rippling water.
When the next species is tagged, striking differences are revealed.
Another pod by a rocky shore.
Antarctic type A's. Much darker in colour, and at 9 meters long, a third larger than most other killer whales.
They swim close together.
Their huge size is an adaptation to hunting whales.
From above,
minke whales.
A minke glides beneath the surface. The slow motion footage of its shiny grey skin gives the water an almost gelatinous appearance.
Living along the ice edge, the minkes retreat at the first sign of danger. But one has ventured away from safety. The killers cut it off. This species uses stamina to wear down its fast-moving prey.
Their dorsal fins slice through the water as they vanish below.
The minke's only hope is to exhaust its attackers. But taking it in turns, the deadly entourage doesn't relent.
With seabirds flying overhead, the killer whales maintain their furious pace. Now, the minke's surrounded.
After 2 hours, the minke's powers of fight and flight are waning. The whale killers close in to drown their victim. They've earned their feast.
The research vessel in slushy waters.
One by one, Bob and John are recording more and more remarkable strategies. A third pod, much smaller in size. These more agile killers are built to catch penguins. It seems that by specializing in different prey, each of Antarctica's killer whale species avoids competition. This enables them all to thrive. At least 25,000, or half the killer whales on the planet, inhabit these waters.
They spy hop, noses to the sky.
But how do these new species start out?
An animated globe.
The answer lies at the other end of the Earth, where scientists are investigating a split in the North Atlantic killer whale population.
Snæfellsnes Peninsula, Iceland.
In Iceland, Philippa Samara and her team need to get within touching distance of a feeding killer whale, so they can attach their equivalent of an aircraft black box.
The D-Tag has two hydrophones, which basically record the sound underwater. It records the movements of the whales and the depth that the whales are at. It has the suction cups, and that's how it goes on the whale. And it has this antenna, which helps us track where the whale is and get the tag back at the end.
Each killer whale needs a lot of fish to satisfy its monster appetite. This remarkable device should reveal how they do it. Until now, it's been thought that all North Atlantic killer whales use the same technique, originally observed in Norway. First, the killers track down their prey, shoals of herring hiding in the depths. They use clicks and listen for the echo, a sophisticated sonar. When one locates its target, it whistles its excitement. Then the pod heads down together, sometimes over 200 meters.
They arrive at the shoal.
It takes several hours to corral the herring up to the surface. a natural barrier to escape.
Herring leap from the water.
Gradually, the killer whales panic their prey into tighter and tighter balls. Finally, they whack them.
The impact of the killer's tails makes some float to the surface. The fish twitch.
They stun whole swathes of fish.
They eat them one by one.
Then suck up the oil-rich pickings.
Writhing up and down on the surface, a herring is quickly snatched up. Scientists observing whales from a rigid inflatable.
But in Iceland, there's no sign of herring being pushed to the surface. These hunters must have developed a new technique. There's only one way to find out.
Dr. Philippa Samara readies the tracking device.
First, a youngster.
It's on!
It's on! It's on!
Oh my God.
Then, a big male.
She releases the tag from a long pole.
It's on! It's on!
A receiver is tuned.
Nice tagging, Ivan. That was great.
Holding the receiver, Dr. Samara looks out to sea.
To form a picture of what's happening in the dark depths, the team employs an acoustic camera.
It's submerged.
Okay, we have whales on sonar.
Okay.
Three whales.
Three whales? This is a multi-beam sonar, which basically gives us an image of what's going on underwater, so we can see the whales interacting with the fish. This tells us what the fish is doing when the whales are feeding.
The team gathers data for the rest of the day.
Speeded up, great swathes of neon green light flow across picturesque Icelandic bays at night. A house surrounded by snow.
Philippa can now put the evidence together. First, the multi-beam sonar.
The sonar really works as a giant ultrasound. And you see that the whales are actually encircling the school of herring, so they're moving around it. And they do this to make the school tighter.
Then the D-tag reveals the killer information.
Here we can see what depth they're going to, that the whales are moving quite straight. They're not making any sounds, but when they start moving in circles, we see that they go much deeper, and they also produce a lot of sounds.
One sound in particular catches Philippa's attention.
You can hear it now. So this is the herding call, which is a very low frequency and long call. And we think that it's really used to basically scare the herring. So it makes the swim bladder of the herring vibrate, and it makes the whole herring school bunch even tighter, which is a very effective hunting technique for these whales.
A killer whale slowly flapping its tail as it descends into the depths.
Most North Atlantic killer whales take hours to herd up their prey.
It begins to circle the shoal.
But thanks to their unique herding call, Iceland's killers do the same thing in minutes.
The killers flick their tails, stunning the fish, then sucking them up.
This small innovation is hugely significant.
They congregate at the surface.
It shows that the North Atlantic's fish-eating killer whales are growing apart. As more differences develop and populations become isolated, eventually a new species could emerge. The discovery of different kinds of killer whale has real implications for their conservation.
The animated Earth.
Each is precious. None more so than the southern residents of Washington State.
A large expanse of water.
50 years ago, the public's fascination with Moby Doll led to a huge demand for captive killer whales. Trappers knew just where to look.
A man admires his view of Puget Sound.
In places just like this from the early 60s, the resident killer whales were rounded up and captured for the aquarium industry.
For Sam Wasser, the memories are still fresh.
Birds take flight from the tops of surrounding trees. Now, archive film of nets positioned in a square in the water. Two men in a dinghy watch a pod swim close by.
Trappers use boats, helicopters, and explosives to herd frightened animals into sheltered bays.
One's trapped between two boats.
It must have been horrific for these whales because, for one thing, killer whales are a predator. They're very, very intelligent, and they're highly social organisms. And putting all those animals together and then ripping the young away from their mothers must have just been enormously stressful.
Whales trapped together within a hauling net. Two rise, then sink.
One of the real telltale signs of that is that in Penn Cove, where one of the really big captures happened, those animals have not been back.
Dr. Wasser by the water.
By 1976, following a backlash from conservationists, the authorities called a halt to the roundups. But the damage had been done.
An archipelago covered with trees.
Four decades on, just 84 southern residents survive, and this number is falling. But killer whales are resilient animals.
These large mammals that have a long generation time, they can recover. We just have to make sure that they have the ability to recover, and that means having good food, having a clean environment to live in, and reducing their stress loads.
The southern residents will need human help to survive. But a recent finding suggests that killer whales can learn to help themselves.
Beneath a stormy grey sky, turbulent waves crash onto partially submerged rocks where two large seals are baring their pointed teeth at each other.
In the Falkland Islands, the elephant seals are wise to the predators lurking just offshore.
Two wallowing in the shallows.
They won't leave the safety of the beach until it's absolutely necessary.
Dorsal fins in the distance.
As a result, few killer whales patrol these shores. But recently it was discovered that one female has found a way to unlock this rich source of food.
Her fin slowly slices through kelp-strewn waters.
Silently, stealthily, she risks it all to enter a tidal pool. Her calf follows her every move, learning her unique technique.
Three elephant seals resting beyond a patch of the seaweed fail to notice the killer's telltale fins just meters away. The paler-skinned calf hangs behind.
If she gets the timing wrong, she'll be stranded and die. But if she can sneak in unnoticed, the rewards will be worth the risk.
She glides under a blanket of wet kelp, its individual strands betraying her elongated form as she brushes against them.
The female spots her target. The tide is falling. She doesn't have long. She edges further into the pool.
A seal lowers its head into the water while the killer whale accelerates stealthily.
This is her chance.
The seal makes to flee as she's about to strike, but she's too quick for it. Her dorsal fin shakes as she attacks.
Now, with a mouthful of floundering seal, she must escape the shallow channel.
Waters churned up as the calf follows her out of the cove. Moving away from the rocks and kelp, they enter the ocean. blowing out air.
She's made it. Amazingly, she won't keep her prize to herself.
They rejoin the pod.
It's the rest of her family that reaps the reward. And there's new evidence that this commitment to others goes beyond what we've ever expected.
Pretty houses around a harbour where boats of various sizes are moored. Lofoten Islands, Norway.
It's summer in the Norwegian Arctic. German biologist Heike Wester has made a remarkable discovery.
A bird's eye view of Heike and a female colleague speeding out to sea on a research boat.
She and her assistant Medita have found a family that takes caring and sharing to a level rarely seen in the animal kingdom. Like all killer whale families, this one is led by a matriarch. But one pod member sets this family apart.
It's a female. Stumpy. Oh, the Stumpy over here. It's right there, see?
Stumpy's severed fin means she's easily identified. First spotted in 1996, people assumed she'd been hit by a boat. 6 years later, her mother had vanished, and Stumpy had taken up with another pod. Since then, she's been seen with four different families.
I'm so happy to see her again because she's 17 years old now and she's really handicapped and she could not have survived by herself.
To find out how she does survive, Heike wants to see Stumpy underwater.
There she is. Yeah, she is, yeah.
With the camera crew here, this is her chance.
She peers at a monitor as a camera's dropped into the water.
Oh, wow. I didn't expect that. It's really twisted.
Her tail's an unusual shape.
Now, from above, you only see the dorsal fin that's cut, but then I could really see the back. And it really looks like it has problems swimming.
The tail is restricted in the movement. It doesn't really go all the way up and down.
Stumpy surfaces.
To find out how she eats at all, Heike must witness a hunt.
The pod swims deeper into the fjord's turquoise waters.
So we stopped now because the killer whales are over there and it looks like they're foraging.
What I do now is put in a hydrophone and listen so I know they're foraging, because if they do, they use echolocation clicks.
Nearly 50 years after the first attempts to interpret Moby Doll's calls, Heike is still trying to unravel their language.
That means they're looking for fish, they're scanning the fjord.
Their sophisticated sonar can determine the size and even species of fish nearby. Heike's found that this family targets mackerel and salmon.
Stumpy swims by.
Stumpy seems keen to join in.
And I listen now for any changes in their communication, because as soon as they get a fish, especially a salmon, I will hear it immediately.
Each species of fish provokes a different call.
Ah, they are calling. Might be that I found a fish.
A dorsal fin.
Suddenly, action.
A whale breaches the surface.
Yeah, action! Oh, next to us, on the left side.
It's every killer whale for itself, chasing down the mackerel one by one. But the real surprise is Stumpy.
Over there, it's the female and Stumpy hunting together.
Underwater.
She's right at the heart of it. Chasing not the fish, but the other killer whales.
A cameraman filming.
The 6-meter female has caught a mackerel, barely 30 centimeters long. She could easily swallow it whole. Instead, she slices it in half and drops a share. Stumpy is there to grab it.
Hike appears at the monitor.
Whether she's being deliberately fed or just scavenging scraps is hard to tell. But this shred of evidence must explain Stumpy's survival. But why would a family of killer whales adopt and care for a handicapped animal?
Well, the reason why the others would help Stumpy is probably purely social, that in such a community, the whole group is important and not just individuals, so they wouldn't leave sick individuals behind. They'd rather take care of them.
Plumes of water from the pod.
It's very selfless behavior. This could be one example, the killer whales, to show how social they are. But there's more to it than we know right now, which makes it really, really exciting.
Perhaps this should come as no surprise. Recent studies of killer whale brains have revealed specialized cells for processing emotions, similar to our own.
Low-lying cloud patches obscure an aerial view of a fjord with snow-capped mountains on the horizon.
In the time since Moby Doll first went on public display, our understanding of killer whales has changed beyond recognition.
Dr. John Ford's on his research boat.
It's amazing today to look back when this study began and how little we knew about the species. We didn't really know what they ate, what their life cycle was like, their natural history, anything about their biology, really. It was all mythology. These were just the scary, dangerous predators that were to be shot on sight.
But with evidence gathered from across the globe, we now have a clear picture of the killer whale's true nature. They can be brutal.
Whales attacking seals, sea lions, and rays.
Intelligent. And can work as a deadly team.
A pod swimming beneath the ice floe in unison.
The emergence of new species changes the way we look at killer whale populations across the world. While some are struggling to survive, others are finding ways to adapt.
Hunting in a cove.
Interpreting their language is still a dream.
I gather it'll be some time then before you can classify these words and make this dictionary, which you hope to do eventually.
Yes, it will.
But the discovery of close families and diverse cultures means we can relate to killer whales more closely than to any other animal in the ocean.
Maybe we're not the only ones that are social and take care of each other, but that animals are more similar to us than we believed before.
After a 50-year journey from fear to fascination, a new era of understanding is just beginning.